From the KTO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton with this state and local news update. Juneau's entire legislative delegation is turning over this election cycle. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has been tracking these three races in the Juneau area. And Jeremy, could you just start by reminding us who's running?
Okay, so Juneau's three legislative seats are all turning over. Senator Egan's Senate District Q seat, he's retiring and not running for re-election. There's two candidates running for that. There's Independent Don Etheridge and Democrat Jesse Keel. In House District 33, this is Sam Keto III's seat. He's not running for re-election. And there's an Independent named Chris Diamond and a Democrat named Sarah Hannon running for that seat. And then House District 34, this was Justin Parrish's seat, Democrat Justin Parrish, and he's also not seeking re-election. That seat is being sought by Democrat Andy Story and Republican Jerry Nan Curvis.
And what else is notable about these races?
So yeah, you know, they appear really hotly contested. There's a lot of money, both compared to other state legislative races this cycle, you know, across the state involved, and looking back historically at these specific races. You know, in the past, it's been tens of thousands of dollars is pretty typical for candidates to raise, and some of these candidates look like they've passed or are passing the $100,000 mark in at this point, with, you know, a little under 30 days left to go till the race itself. And also interesting, there's two of these candidates are independents taking on party establishment candidates.
So Politico put its national spotlight on Alaska earlier this year as a place where political independents are on the rise. So are these independent candidates part of that trend?
There's a yes, but there's also a but. Juneau doesn't exactly fit the Politico premise. Their headline was How to Turn a Red State Purple, but Alaska as a whole, you know, is red, of course, and Juneau, of course, leans liberal and Democratic. But yeah, these two independents are taking on establishment Democrats.
Who's backing independents, at least here in Juneau?
Right. So when I dug through the Alaska Public Offices Commission, their campaign finance disclosures and, you know, popping in and talking with Andrew Kitchenman, our State House reporter, and attending a few campaign events. So Independent Don Etheridge, he's facing Democrat Jesse Keel in the Senate race. And Etheridge has a lot of support from labor unions, building trades especially, and like the actual members, individual laborers, and also a lot of local establishment Republicans. In the House District 33 race, this is the downtown Lemon Creek Douglas race and the bluer of Juneau's two House districts. Independent Chris Diamond also has a lot of labor support. Politically, he's got a wider spectrum, though. He's got liberal millennials like Carol Treem, and Anchorage Republican Representative Gabrielle Ledoux is one of his financial backers. Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez, and John Henry Heckendorn of the Walker Mallott campaign.
So does that make these independents more conservative?
Yeah, it's a good question. So in a candidate forum we had the other night here, Etheridge and Diamond, they didn't come off as especially conservative. On social issues and fiscal issues, they were generally pretty close to their Democratic opponents. The main thing that really seems to distinguish them from the party line Democrats is they're more pro-development and more pro-business than their opponents.
All right. Is there anything else we need to know about these races right now?
Well, early voting starts October 22nd and election day is November 6th.
All right. Jeremy, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Today, President Trump signed into law a bill from Alaska U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan.
Let's get this done properly, huh?
The law is called Save Our Seas, and it aims to tackle the problem of plastic trash in the world's oceans. It renews the existing marine debris program for another 5 years, and it allows governors to request something like a disaster declaration, what's called a severe marine debris event, in order to get resources to clean it up. The law also encourages the executive branch to take up the problem of plastic waste internationally. Academic researchers say five nations are responsible for more than half of the plastic waste in the oceans: China, Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam. In an Oval Office ceremony, President Trump fit that into one of his major themes, that other countries are taking advantage of the United States.
Vast, tremendous, unthinkable amount of garbage is floating right into our coast, in particular along the West Coast. And we're charged with removing it, which is a very unfair situation. It comes from other countries very far away.
Trump, touching on another theme, claimed previous administrations did nothing to take on the problem, even though the law extends a marine debris program established in the George W. Bush administration. Trump says he's already notified most of the countries responsible.
And we've notified them very strongly.
Sullivan and his wife stood beside the president, along with Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, who co-sponsored the bill. Even though Whitehouse is a Democrat and a vocal Trump critic, there was no disagreement on the new law. Sullivan took the opportunity to give kudos to the president.
And what the president said about the administration, the Trump administration, doing a great job on this, it's an underreported story, but they are really taking the lead globally. And Mr. President, we want to thank you for
well,
that.
I want to thank, bipartisan. I want to thank you, and I want to thank Sheldon. Thank you. Come here, Sheldon. See? We can shake hands.
Kevin Alexson works on the issue for the Ocean Conservancy. He says the real value of the bill, besides continuing the marine debris program, is that it makes the executive branch take notice and address the international problem.
You know, whether that's in the context of trade negotiations, or it's in the context of international scientific collaboration, or it's in the context of foreign development assistance.
Alexson says the countries that contribute most to the problem of plastic waste in the ocean are rapidly developing, and they don't have adequate infrastructure for managing garbage. Alaska Congressman Don Young sponsored the House version of that bill. The Haines Borough Finance Committee has decided to do away with an excise tax on local marijuana cultivators due to concerns that it would make their prices less competitive. Now the committee is considering a new method for taxing marijuana sales within the borough. KHNS's Henry Leisha has more.
At the moment, an excise tax of $5 per ounce to be paid by local marijuana cultivators is written in borough code. Finance Committee Chair Tom Morfitt says this makes local cultivators less competitive with grow operations outside of the borough because the price of this tax is added to their fee when selling to retailers.
So the assembly found that was kind of punitive because people who produced marijuana that sold it here that weren't from Haines weren't paying for it. That sent us down the trail of how we wanted to modify our excise tax. Did we want it to apply to all producers, or did we want it instead maybe change it to put the burden on consumers?
The Finance Committee is looking at ditching the excise tax for a special sales tax on marijuana. It would be an additional percentage tacked on to the 5% sales tax that residents already pay when buying any product within the borough. According to Morfitt, a special sales tax has several advantages over an excise tax. He says it's easy to understand and administer, and as the value of marijuana increases, tax revenue will as well. Jason Adams is the owner of Wintergreens, the only recreational marijuana dispensary currently operating in the Haynesboro. He agrees that a sales tax would be much easier to keep track of than an excise tax.
On my end, the sales tax is collected right at the register, paid every month to the borough, and it's very easy. Whereas if it was pushed on the growers, then the producers of cannabis would have to come in and pay the tax or to have me hold those taxes, add them up, and make sure that they're all correct as I turn them in. And all that process and work would be done gratis if I had to do it. So a sales tax is the best way to go about it.
When asked if he thinks it is fair that the borough is considering a special tax for marijuana that doesn't apply to other products, Adams said he feels singled out at the moment, but eventually taxes on his product will be as normal as any other tax. But Assemblyman Morfitt expressed interest in attaching an equal tax on alcohol if the special sales tax on marijuana moves forward.
That has not been vetted publicly. It's something that I think I would support, at least as a trial balloon, to see what people thought. I don't know that we should discriminate between narcotics.
A special sales tax on marijuana would have to be approved by voters. Funds from the tax may be designated for a specific use, but the Finance Committee has yet to determine what that use may be. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.